Mike is from Central America. Now he works in a chicken processing plant in Mississippi. And he's been working through the pandemic, just like thousands of meatpacking workers across the country.
I spoke to the manager the other day saying, like, they want us to keep working. They will say, yes, we have to keep working because we have to provide food for the United States. But I was like, and we run out of masks. We don't have no mask. So we taking a big risk, you know, just working without masks. Nobody has masks because they've been run out of masks.
We are not protected by nothing.
You are listening to Bite. I'm Maddie Oatman, and I'm here with Tom Philpott. Mike's story came to us from the podcast The Uncertain Hour, and you'll hear more of it soon.
On today's show, we're going to dig into why poultry plants are the way they are, and we'll hear about how some poultry workers have weathered the pandemic.
Now, Tom, you were one of the first reporters to write about the fear of coronavirus hitting chicken processing plants. Tell us a little bit about the story you published in early April.
Yeah, so I was able to talk to workers at huge poultry plants in Arkansas and Texas just before the coronavirus swept through the industry. And the workers there, they really impressed me with tales of just how awful things were before the virus even hit. Workers are working really fast, making repetitive motions with really sharp knives. They were reporting repetitive stress injuries, really strong smells from disinfecting agents. One woman told me about those smells that it's just awful. It makes your throat and chest hurt and gives you headaches. And those aren't the kind of symptoms you want to have when there's a viral pandemic moving around. And, you know, at the time, masks and hand sanitizer were really hard to come by. Social distancing in the line was pretty much impossible. They lived in fear of getting sick and bringing the disease home to their families, but they had little choice but to keep working because they're getting paid very little, had very little in savings, and of course, they still had rent to pay and food to buy.
And what happens inside these plants affects the rest of us. Data gathered by the Food and Environment Reporting Network shows that rural counties that contain meatpacking plants with outbreaks of COVID-19 have infection rates that are 5 times higher on average than the rest of rural America. What made poultry plants such prime targets of the coronavirus? Caitlin Esch, a senior producer with the podcast The Uncertain Hour, has been digging into this backstory. Producer Molly Schwartz has the story.
The Uncertain Hour is one of my favorite podcasts. It's an investigative series, and in every season, they do a deep dive into the history behind the policies that we have today. I should mention that my boyfriend, Peter Balanon-Rosen, is a producer on the show, and he told me that his coworker, Caitlin, who's a senior producer on the show, had been researching the history of poultry plants for months. And so then after reports came out that the coronavirus was hitting meatpacking plants, I wanted to hear more about her reporting. We caught up at the end of May.
The Uncertain Hour is Marketplace's documentary podcast. And for this season, we're just looking to the past to try to understand the present. And we're looking at history and the policies that have been enacted in the past that lead us to where we are today.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, you're looking at specifically how things have been affected by the coronavirus crisis right now. I've seen in the news a lot about meatpacking plants. There have been some big COVID-19 outbreaks at some major plants like Tyson. But I know that you were focusing specifically on chicken plants in the first episode. And I was wondering what made you decide to focus on chicken plants in particular and what led you to Scott County, Mississippi?
So we were doing some reporting in Mississippi before the pandemic hit for some stories that will come out later this summer. And so we were already talking to people who work in poultry processing in the plants and who work on sort of the more farm side of things like chicken catchers. And when the pandemic hit, we just, you know, stayed in touch with those people and checked back in with them through March and April as things were, you know, getting worse and worse in many parts of the country. And just sort of following along with their lives. And then we started to see these outbreaks happening in meatpacking towns and in plants all across the country. And it wasn't all that surprising because, you know, I mean, particularly in poultry plants, workers work really close together. It was already a hard job before the pandemic. You know, workers make a lot of, you know, thousands of repetitive motions in a shift. They're sometimes working shoulder to shoulder. It's difficult to take breaks to, you know, even go to the bathroom, let alone wash your hands multiple times per shift. So the conditions were sort of ripe for a virus like the coronavirus to spread. Scott County has about 28,000 people and it has 630 COVID cases last I checked this morning. So that makes it a hotspot. It's one of the counties with the most COVID cases per capita in the country. It's like in the top like two or three dozen counties nationwide.
I noticed that as I was reading about these plants, a lot of them were called poultry processing plants or chicken processing plants. Processing is kind of a vague word, and I was wondering if you could break down a little bit what goes into processing a chicken and about how many chickens are processed on a given day inside some of these facilities.
Many thousands. Yeah, I mean, I know processing is a vague term. So I have to say I have not been admitted entrance into any of these plants. So this is all from what people have told me. But chicken processing is, yeah, a term for slaughtering and plucking and deboning and cutting up chicken. And my understanding is that, you know, thousands of chickens are processed in a day. And line speeds, I think right now you can process 140, most plants process 140 birds per minute. But they are getting line speed waivers to process more than that. I think it's upwards of 175 or even more birds per minute. So it's a lot of birds going through there. And we talked to people who worked hanging chickens on the back dock, which is like sort of the first, you know, they come off the trucks from having been caught at the farms. And they arrive at the plants and workers, you know, take them out of the cages and hang them by their feet. They're then killed, and then they're plucked, and then they're deboned. Working conditions are pretty crowded inside of chicken plants. You work shoulder to shoulder with your, you know, your coworkers. You're on your feet for many hours a day. You make repetitive cutting motions. One study found that poultry workers make up to 60,000 repetitive motions in a single shift. So carpal tunnel syndrome and all sorts of injuries can arise from that.
I'm interested in the fact that there were a lot of immigrants working at the plants that you were reporting on in Mississippi. How did this come to be?
Yeah. So Angela Stisi, the anthropologist at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, has a whole book on this. And she documents the very intentional effort of a company called BC Rogers to bring immigrant workers to central Mississippi to work in the in the poultry processing plants. In the 1930s and 40s, it was mostly white women who worked in the poultry plants. And again, they were not as unionized as meatpacking plants in northern Midwestern cities. And then in the 60s and 70s, the plants became desegregated and the workforce became mostly African American. And then in the 90s, some efforts to unionize and organize among workers were starting to gain some traction.
Here's a clip of Caitlin's interview with Angela Stisi.
Angela says the oldest poultry company in the state of Mississippi was a company called BC Rogers.
BC Rogers was sort of confronting the reality that they were going to have to start negotiating with their workers around working conditions and wages. So it was advantageous both because of sort of the labor pressures and because of the expanding industry to find a deeper and more expendable pool of workers.
At first, Angela says the company brought in workers from surrounding counties, even as far away as Alabama.
Until they figured out that there was this seemingly endless supply of Latin American immigrant workers that they could bring.
The owner of BC Rogers came up with a plan to relocate immigrant workers from South Florida to rural Mississippi. The initiative even had a name.
The Hispanic Project with a capital H and a capital P.
They advertised jobs in a local paper in Miami.
And set up a small office in a Cuban store.
And started recruiting people to work at the chicken plants.
And I think even they were surprised at how much interest there was. And they said within the first week, they had a Greyhound bus of workers and they just kept bringing them. And for 4 years, they brought a Greyhound bus each week of workers for the plants.
She has documented the very intentional ways in which poultry companies brought immigrant workers to the Deep South to work in the poultry plants. And then over time, they have come increasingly to rely on undocumented labor. And so, you know, there are so many reasons for why those workers are more vulnerable. And, you know, wage violations may go unchecked, that kind of thing. Those workers are less empowered.
You are listening to Bite, and you've been hearing about what led chicken processing plants to hire so many immigrant workers. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, you'll hear from one of those workers about what it's been like to package chicken during a pandemic. Welcome back to Bite. We've been hearing from Caitlin Esch from the podcast The Uncertain Hour about why chicken plants in the South rely so heavily on immigrant workers. Caitlin interviewed one of the workers, who we are calling Mike.
So the person who we interviewed for the episode, we did not use his real name in the episode. He was concerned about retribution. He was concerned about getting fired or retaliated against at work, which is very common among workers in poultry plants. Sometimes it's because of documentation issues. They may be an undocumented worker. And you probably know there were these massive ICE raids there over the summer. So there's still a lot of fear in the air following that. His story is not uncommon. He has been working in the poultry plants for many years, and he is from Central America. Came to the United States as a teenager, and he met his wife in Mississippi. They had two kids. They have two kids. His wife was undocumented, and she was caught up in the ICE raids in August, and she was detained, and she had been working at Cook Foods under someone else's name, and so she was facing criminal charges for identity fraud. So rather than, face jail time, she went back to her home country and she took her two kids with her. Mike has been working in the chicken plants since then, living alone.
Yeah, it's sad because I don't have to spend time with nobody like I used to have with my daughter. Like, I would spend time with her whenever I get home. Now, I'll just get into my room, and it's boring because and then I start missing her because I don't see her playing around like she used to. So, yeah, my life has been changed, and it is not the same as it was before.
And so we were just sort of checking in with people that we know there. And early on, what was most notable was how little seemed to change for them. The plants were still operating at normal capacity and processing, you know, a lot of chickens. Workers didn't necessarily have protective gear. They, for the most part, don't have sick days or health insurance. So the companies didn't seem to be reacting proactively and quickly sort of early on. And so the conditions were there for people to start getting sick. And that is what happened in central Mississippi and all over the country.
I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of afraid because we are really close and we're exposed too much because sometimes we are together and there's not like 10 people or it's more than like 100 or either I think 500 or a little bit over. So, and then I spoke to the manager the other day saying like they want us to keep working. They were saying, yes, we have to keep working because we have to provide food for the United States. But I was like, and we run out of mask. We don't have no mask. So, we taking a big risk, you know, just working without masks. Nobody has masks because they've been run out of masks.
We are not protected by nothing.
Once the virus hit, you know, people weren't necessarily given space. Social distancing is not really possible in the plants. But if you do spread workers out, you have to slow the production lines, which means that you're producing less chicken. So, you know, at first, I think poultry companies were really slow to do some of that, and they were slow to give out protective equipment. And then once they were giving out protective equipment, I talked to an activist who's talks to a lot of workers, and she was saying one of the biggest complaints is, like, if you have a mask, but then it gets soaked in blood, do you just keep wearing that mask? Do you throw the mask away? Do you get another mask? So, you know, some of the protective measures that are in place in some of the plants, they may not be sufficient.
Yeah. I was really struck by what he was saying about how nothing has really changed in terms of his day-to-day work and the protective gear that they were getting. I was also really struck by your interview with a chicken catcher and what he did to take care of his hands. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how you first got in touch with him and how he described some of the physical effects of the work that he does day to day.
I talked to a guy who's a chicken catcher, which is a job that I didn't even know existed prior to doing this reporting. Chicken catchers go out to farms, usually in the middle of the night, because chickens don't like light. They get agitated more in the day, but apparently they're much more calm at night. And so they go out in the middle of the night and they round up chickens by hand and they grab them by the legs, kind of flip them upside down and hold them between their fingers. And this one chicken catcher who I talked to, he's been doing this for a while, so he can hold up to 15 small birds between both of his hands. And yeah, it takes a lot of skill. You have to be quick. And chickens have spurs, so you have to watch out for the spurs. And they, you know, they shoot excrement at you. They peck at you. And it's a really hard job. And chicken catchers are paid by the 1,000 birds caught. So it's a piece rate, not an hourly wage. So there's a motivation to work quickly. And they're paid, I think it amounts to, so each crew gets paid, you know, if they go into a house and it's like 50,000 birds, they get paid for 50,000 birds, and then they split up, they kind of split up that money between the crew of, say, 9 people. So this one chicken catcher that I talked to, he estimated that he would make around $2.05 for every 1,000 birds that the crew caught. That would be his share for small birds. And then I think it was $2.75 for the bigger birds. So it's a lot of birds that you're touching, and they're, you know, it's really hard on the hands. And so all the chicken catchers that I talked to have stories about their hands, you know, about how it was, you know, when they first started catching chickens, maybe their hands would swell up or their fingers would lock. And so they all have different hand care rituals.
Like I said, I got a remedy I use. And my hands don't swell that bad because I soak them in vinegar. Vinegar take a lot of stuff away. This is a job nobody wants to do anymore because it's nasty, it's dirty, and it don't pay enough.
And, you know, when chicken poop breaks down, it releases ammonia, which can be really hard on the lungs and on the eyes. There's dust that gets kicked up in the air, and it can really irritate your skin. And it can be really hot. And so, you know, you're sweating and you're chafing. One guy told me about all of these workarounds that he has for protecting his skin and protecting his hands. You know, you can look at a chicken catcher's hands and you can see the difference. One guy that I interviewed had a significantly bigger hand than the other because that was his grabbing hand. You know, some people's hands stay swollen indefinitely.
The main hand that you put the chickens in, it disformed your knuckles, and all your knuckles will be disformed, messes your hands up. They'll swell up first, and once you catch for a while, they'll go back down to normal size. But a lot of people, their hands never go down. Their hands always stay swollen out to big. You can tell they're a chicken catcher.
So we talked to one chicken catcher who works for a subcontractor hired by Cook Foods. And Cook Foods is a pretty big poultry processor. It subcontracts out the chicken catching to these third-party businesses. So one guy that we talked to works for one of those companies. And this work has always been hard. But some chicken catchers say that when they were working directly for the main company, say Cook Foods, they did get benefits and sick days and vacation days and sort of, you know, the things that employees get in this country a lot of times. And when, you know, there's always been subcontracting to some degree, but at some point over the past 15 years or so, it seems like it went entirely to subcontracting. And there's debate over whether it should be the third party subcontractor who's ultimately responsible, or the company who owns the chickens and the processing plants who's subcontracting out that labor.
I would want Cook to feel like that we're important to them too. Because even as we make sure people got food, we're making sure that their company still run without going under. So I feel like that we ought to be appreciated for that.
What kinds of things would show you that you're appreciated by the company? What kinds of things would you want?
I would want to be recognized more and like for people to know that we still got catchers out there that work for some contractors that is going forth too, putting their life on the line to make sure people have food. Because that's just what we're doing with this virus. We're putting our life on the line to make sure everybody got food to eat.
Something that I really appreciate about The Uncertain Hour in general is how you get into the historical roots of some of our present-day problems. So in the context of this episode, what did you discover about why working conditions at chicken plants are the way that they are today?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons, but we picked apart three in our episode, and we looked at subcontracting and the reliance on immigrant and undocumented labor, and then unions and sort of lack of unions. And most poultry plants are not unionized in the Deep South. Most poultry plants in the U.S. are in the Deep South, and most are not unionized, unlike pork and beef. Most of the pork and beef consumed in this country does come from a union shop. Poultry is the opposite. Most poultry does not come from a union plant in this country. I think upwards of like around 70% of poultry plants are not unionized. So, workers don't have the benefit of those protections that are sort of hard fought by unions.
Yeah. Have you seen any of that reflected in the COVID-19 outbreaks? Like, have they been worse? And has the response been worse at chicken plants, partly because they're less unionized?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting question. And I've been asking that to a lot of people myself, because it seemed like, I mean, some of the plants that we heard about, like the big pork plants and some beef plants, you know, they had thousands of workers and they were union shops. And we were hearing a lot about them because, in part because the outbreak was so bad, but also because the union was there, giving interviews, pulling workers out to give interviews, people were using their first and last names without fear of retaliation. And I do think that the union was able to bring attention to these issues kind of early on.
I'm wondering whether you think the federal government could be doing a better job protecting workers. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which is known as OSHA, is part of the Department of Labor. Its core mission is to, quote, assure safe and healthy working conditions for working men and women. Do you think there's any role that OSHA could be playing right now? Like, is there anything that they can or should be doing to help give better worker protections to people working in chicken processing?
Yeah, OSHA and CDC put out guidelines for meatpacking plants to protect workers. I think it was in late April, so pretty late in the pandemic. And they're voluntary, so they're not enforced. So it's kind of up to the company, up to the plant, how they protect workers. The guidelines are there. And I did talk to the National Chicken Council, and that's an industry group that represents a lot of chicken processors. And they say that their members are following the guidelines very closely. But there's no real proof that that's happening. And we know that there's the guidelines are not being enforced because they're not required. So OSHA could require protections for workers. It could make it mandatory, but it hasn't done that so far.
Thank you so much, and good luck with the rest of your reporting, Caitlin. I'm looking forward to listening to the rest of the episodes.
Thank you so much.
This has been another episode of Bite. Today's episode was a collaboration with The Uncertain Hour, a podcast by Marketplace. And the interviews with workers you heard originally aired on their first episode of season 4. Reporting for that by Caitlin Esch, and production for Byte by Molly Schwartz. Claire Mullen is our sound engineer, and this is her last show working with us. A huge thanks to you, Claire, for everything you've contributed to the show. We have loved working with you. Seth Samuel composed our theme song. Our senior producer is Kira Butler, and Maddie Oatman is our executive producer. Byte is a production of Mother Jones, a reader-supported nonprofit news organization.
From PRX.